We are in Revelation 13. We're just moving right along now. Any questions about chapter 12 or anything before? A little over halfway through. And well, at least she's not blaming it on Blake this time. I blame it on Jordan. Her mama blamed it on her. I guarantee it. You just tested negative. There's a difference.
No, they didn't even test me. I just don't have it.
Oh, okay. Well, we're glad to have you with us. Sorry that you felt bad last week. The last verse of chapter 12 kind of pictured something, and I'm going to read it again because we just kind of went through it, but we didn't really talk about the last verse, and that was by design. But we're getting into chapter 13, but the last verse of chapter 12 says, "And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus." And so as we look at that and we think about some of the things that are going on here, I want to start by doing this. Joe, will you look up Exodus 19, verse 4? And I want to go back to verse 5 real quickly. It says, "She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and his throne." Verse 5 kind of leaves you in this place of where it's kind of leaving out the Gospels, if you think really hard about it, because she bore a child and then he ascended into heaven, and you're missing the whole story of Christ. We kind of jump through that, and this is just to wrap up chapter 12 real quick as we head into 13. But Joe, what does Exodus 19:4 say?
"You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself."
Okay. See, we talked about the eagle's wings and the imagery of a great eagle that's in the last part of chapter 12. If we go back to verse 14, it says, "The woman was given two wings of a great eagle." I remember Isaiah 40:31 that says, "We shall mount up on wings like eagles, we shall run and not grow weary, and walk and not faint." And that is those who wait upon the Lord. So there's a lot of imagery throughout the Bible that leads us into this. But the last verse of chapter 12 pictures Satan standing by the sea as if to summon his henchmen from the troubled waters. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but it says, "And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ." Verse 16 says, "But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of its mouth." So he's basically poured out this flood water. The earth has swallowed it up, and it's almost like he's standing at the edge of this now where the earth has swallowed it, and he's saying, "You've not seen the last of me," almost kind of situation. It's an eerie, almost an eerie thought to think about how the imagery here plays out. But it leads us into chapter 13, which is...
Are you in New King James?
I am.
I was looking to CSB, and it was in the 18th verse.
Okay. What verse is that?
18?
Yeah, read that. I don't have it on me.
The dragon stood on the sand of the sea.
The dragon stood... And that's the 18th verse that I don't have, apparently.
Well, it's not in the ESV and it's not in the New King James.
I saw the look of confusion on your face.
Right.
It's in the ESV, just not as the 18th verse.
It's part of the 17th verse.
It's actually part of chapter 13 in the King James.
Well, 13:1. Do you have a 13:2 in the CSV? Does it go from does it go to 13:2?
Say what now?
Does it go to chapter 13, verse 2?
Then it's got a verse and then it has a verse
2. Right. Okay. Chapter 13, verse 1 says he or I.
It says I, King James.
The word is interchangeable. I was going to look at that, but I'm glad he brought it up because there have been versions that are... This is where the division of chapter and verse is done by man and where you can see some... It's not a contradiction. It's one version translates it one way and then another, and then a newer version says, wait a minute, maybe it means this. The end of chapter 12, the last verse, leaves you with a picture. So let me read this real quickly, and I'll go back and talk about that, because I actually have that in my notes, but I didn't have it. I was just assuming 13:1 is how it would be in everybody else. I didn't realize that there are now versions that have taken, and I didn't bring the CSV with me tonight, so... I didn't realize there were versions that have now.
Yeah,
I'm in the New King James tonight. Most of mine are through the New King James. It's sometimes the wording, but tonight I'm New King James. Chapter 13, verses 1 through 10 is basically where we're at. I'm going to go through this. I'm going to read the first 10 verses, but I'm probably not getting through more than a couple tonight. It says, then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast, so they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months, again, 3.5 years. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. It's a lot of information. Verse 1. The first part of verse 1 in chapter 13 in the New King James says, then I stood on the sand of the sea. The word I can also be translated as he, which takes us to the CSV translation, which is then he stood on the sand of the shore of the sea. Which likely is a better translation. Because it leaves us with the picture of that being the case. So it kind of leaves you with him standing on the edge of the sea.
CSB says the dragon stood on the sand of the sea.
Right. Instead of saying he, it clarifies and says the dragon to avoid any... I just didn't realize that's chapter 12, verse 18.
Right.
Okay, I didn't realize that they had done that in the CSB. I thought it was still part of 13:1. This is where the chapter verse thing gets really confusing. it doesn't seem to make sense that John would be saying he was standing on the sand of the sea, but then again, it does, because he's seeing these visions. But why would John be watching this from right there when he's been called back up into heaven and it appears that everything else is happening from there and he's watching this happen? And then all of a sudden he's down. And so that's where some of the clarification has come in. Essentially, it, either way, I believe that the translation should be he or the dragon is standing on the edge of the sea, summoning of the beast. Because the rest of the story here seems to play into that the dragon has a major role with this beast. But if John's standing on the edge of the sea, all he's doing is he's got a front row seat, and that's all. So either way, it could even be both. Unable to reach the woman, he calls out to the beast, is what this appears to be. Now, the dragon we've already talked about being Satan, which the beast would then be the Antichrist. But in chapter 13, we're introduced to the two agents through whom Satan carries out his war against the believers. And in the language of the apocalyptic, they are beasts. They are... a train, isn't it? All right, we'll just stay until it quits. Fair? Pat's like, no, I got to get home. The first comes out of the sea, and it's a grotesque seven-headed monster, one of which appears to have been damaged by a sword. And that's in verse 3. And we'll talk about some other things here. We haven't gotten to verses 12 and 14 yet, but in verses 12 and 14 it says, and he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. This is talking about the second. And causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. In other words, this is where we start to see the Antichrist and the similarities to the Christ figure of the mortal wound. Then it was fixed or healed and rose from the dead type thing. We'll get into all that as we continue here, but the unbelieving world worships both the beast and the dragon that gives him authority. That's pretty obvious around us today, honestly. I mean, I don't think I really need to describe exactly what that's saying, do I? I mean, it's pretty much essentially the truth about that. The beast is allowed to blaspheme God and exercise his authority for 42 months. He's permitted to make war against the saints and conquer them. And those whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life will worship the beast. Those who are not part of the elect, those who are not part of the saved, at this point, they have no choice but to worship the beast. Because if you're not worshiping God, you are what?
Worshiping
the devil. Exactly. Even whatever the beast may be called at this point when we get to this, it is a beast. So here we see this beast that comes forth. And there's two beasts you've got that come up in this or in the description in chapter 13. The first beast is the one from the sea. And the sea is a metaphor for disturbed and stormy. This is where things get interesting, just so you know. Verse 1. The sea, I think, is very metaphorical. How many times have we ever felt like we're drowning in the world? We're drowning in society. We're drowning in social issues. We're drowning in the things around us. And out of that sea, the sea, this beast arises. I think I'm trying to be really careful because I'm trying not to take the symbolism too far. And if anybody has any ideas, please feel free to interject. But the more I've studied this, the more I've thought of this, and the more I've put things together in some of this, this is where things get really dicey on symbolism as far as like what we can understand. But I do feel like this is almost like a social issue, see, or a political See? Where the beast arises out of the sea to take a place of authority. And it's given authority over everything. Which is one of the reasons why world leaders are often referred to as an Antichrist. Or could this be the Antichrist? Or, you know, accusations are made about certain world leaders in certain situations. I mean, all of these things could lead us to a circumstance where we see, oh, wow, you know. And it seems to be that the U.S. president always tends to be a conversation with this. And I'm not saying current or previous or to come. Here, however, is where we get into the situation where Russia gets brought up. Because this is where we start to think about the symbolism of the world. And, well, let's just see here for a second. It says, the beast is the same figure as Daniel's fourth beast. If we go to chapter 7 of Daniel, the beasts that are described in the book of Daniel, this appears to be the same one that Daniel describes in chapter 7, where he describes a beast that has seven heads, 10 horns, and on his horns, 10 crowns. And if we're looking at some of this, it kind of leads us into a circumstance here where we're thinking about this. The beast has 10 horns, 7 heads, and on the horns are diadems or crowns, and on each head is a blasphemous name. Which, at this point, I would almost venture to say that, symbolically speaking, you're looking at a 10-headed or a 7-headed, or, you know, you're looking at something more than just one person. You're almost looking at a government agency, or you're almost looking at a leadership pact or an ally, so to speak. Like, this is where ISIS has become part of the conversation, where you have like Syria and you got these world leaders who are leaders in countries but are also parts of these groups, and they take steps up. And then when you start to look at some of these other things, you've got Russia, who was often symbolized as a bear, and you got the feet of the bear, you got the leopard, all of these things that are taking place. I'm trying to refrain from that conversation because I don't want to throw accusation on certain things, but I also want us to be careful about how we accuse based on symbolism we know now in the world, because it may be that and it may not be that. It might be that this is something completely different we've yet to see. But what we can recognize in this is that on the horns are diadems, and on each head is a blasphemous name. In other words, a name that is derogatory to God, a name that is not it doesn't bring God glory. In fact, it tears God down. I have my thoughts on what this could be, but I don't know if right now is the time to really dive in. The extended discussion of the horns and heads will be reserved for chapter 17, so I don't really want to get into the conversation right now, because in a few chapters we're really going to dive into that conversation, so I'm going to leave it there for right now. That's where an angel of judgment supplies a detailed interpretation of the beast and the rider. So I want to leave that one there, because if I start talking about it now, we're going to skip ahead and we're going to end up probably a little more confused. So I want to skip that for now, but the 10 horns are like those of Daniel's fourth beast in Daniel 7:7. And in Daniel 7, they represent the 10 kings that come out of the fourth kingdom. So I don't see why there would be a different interpretation here through what we're seeing in Revelation. If it's the same beast, then the ten horns, I think, would represent the same thing, right? So you're looking for ten leaders that come out of one kingdom, and there's the seven heads. You know, in Revelation 17, the seven heads are also seven kings. So it's going to end up being something that we do end up talking about. But in the present vision, we only learn that on each horn there is a crown, and the crown is the insignia of royal authority. It is the representation of royalty or of leadership or authority. And so there's a number of suggestions as to why the diadems are placed on the horns rather than on the heads of the beast. But the most plausible is that his claim to authority rests on brute force. It rests on that type of violent, forceful taking of. Like, the authority that was given to this beast was not authority that could be fought against. I mean, it continues and explains that here. But the beast has seven heads, stresses its relationship to the seven-headed dragon that we saw already in verse 3 of chapter 12, where a fiery red dragon having seven heads and ten horns and seven diadems on the heads. Here's where you have the crowns on the heads. Well, now you have a beast with the crowns on the horns. And does that mean that three more kingdoms join the force? Or, you know, this beast seems to be similar to the dragon that we described, but yet there's a difference. And that difference is just as subtle as where the crowns are placed and what they represent. So here is where my question comes into factor of what would John be talking about here? And this is where things really start to slow down, because I really would like answers on this, if at all possible, if you happen to have them or have ideas. The power and authority of the beast come from the dragon. It's given by the dragon. And then in apocalyptic literature, the number seven carries the idea of completeness. So the seven heads would be a complete head. It would be, there are no additions or subtractions, so to speak. The seven-headed beast would be an appropriate symbol for the ultimate enemy of the believing church. So here's my question. Who is the beast in this vision? I mean, all the beasts that we start to see would be the Antichrist type mentality, but who is the beast that John is relaying to us here? Possibly.
Possibly wrong.
Correct. That didn't take long. I figured we'd have a longer discussion. There's actually little doubt, I think, among scholars on that one, that this would be the Roman Empire that he's describing.
So explain that again. You're going to have to back up.
All right. I'm getting there. There's little doubt that for John, this beast represented Rome. Is that to say that it actually did? I don't know. But there's a lot of conversation that a lot of revelation for the first century church represented the Roman Empire and the fall of Rome and the fact that the church was persecuted by the Roman Empire to the point where Nero became the Antichrist, and all of these things seem to play out.
Is it pertaining to now, though? Is it pertaining to now at the end?
History is doomed to repeat itself. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but would it then? Or would it be pertaining to now?
I have a whole lot of things
I could say. Or whenever the end is.
The truth is,
it may not be now.
What has... Oh, this is going to come across really fun. The end of chapter 12 talks about eagle's wings.
Yeah.
And what has often been compared to the Roman Empire? And the only reason I bring this up is because there are many who believe that that might be the case. But what country today is often compared to Rome? Correct. For those of you that didn't see it, Kyle went like this. For those of you that couldn't see it on the recording, I take that to mean the United States. Okay. I can't really say yes or no on that.
Because it might be now, and it might be 100 years from now, whatever it's going to be.
There's a lot of people who believe that, and I don't think that it's necessarily the United States as a whole or as a country per se. I think it's an idea. It's an ideal or an idiom, so to speak. It's something that's going to happen. I don't know that we've seen any of this play out in front of us yet, but I don't know that it's far from happening. John's vision, let me go back to John's vision for a moment. John's vision would have grown out of the fact of the historical aspect of what was taking place in the first century. Who put John on the Isle of Patmos? I mean, let's just leave it right there. Because in his historical context, in essence, now, this is where we could enter another conversation that could get really crazy, and this is something that I don't think necessarily we see, but again, as I said, history is doomed to repeat itself. History has a way of repeating itself. Are there 7 great empires? Are there 10 great empires that maybe over the course of history could all represent this? That throughout the course of history, this has happened more than once. Rome would have just been one of those 7 heads. The Mongolian Empire could have been one of those 7 heads. The United States could be one of those 7 heads. I don't know. Russia could be considered that. Russia would be more along the lines of the feet, according to the conversation, based on what things we see. But the beast, in essence, what John's vision of this kind of comes from his own historical events that are taking place for him, his own historical context, but complete fulfillment of this, and I can't stress this enough, awaits the final end of human history, which will culminate in the return of Christ. At that moment, all of this is fulfilled. So therefore, it could be something we're missing. We could look at it and say, well, yeah, it makes sense for it to be the Roman Empire. Well, yeah, it makes sense for it to be this or that. But if Christ hasn't returned and if this has not been finished, then it's really hard for me to say that it's actually happened in full the way that John's describing it. Is it possible Revelation was only for the first century church and it was correlated to Rome and Nero? And absolutely. You can sit down and actually go through the book of Revelation, and you could sit down and with almost every little thing within it, find a way that it correlates to Rome and Rome alone. It talks about the mark of the beast, the Antichrist, the number that is on him. Well, numerically speaking, by number, the way that they gave numbers to names, Nero added up to 666. Or the number. Actually, I think there's even an argument that it was not that it was 666. It should be 686. So there's all kinds of arguments that are out there. I don't know how numerology works, so I avoid that conversation completely. Essentially, what we can see in this is this: the beast has always been, will be, in a final intensified manifestation, and the defecation of secular authority. It will be the definition of this. It's going to end up being something large that we will not be able to misinterpret when it happens. That's the way I look at it. Now, we can sit here and try to put a name or a face on it from day one. The Roman Empire made sense because a blasphemous name could have been anywhere from Nero to, you know, you could go through the leaders at that time, the Roman emperors, the ones that had the figureheads. The argument about the seven heads and ten crowns would be where Rome had control over areas where you'd have two kings under control of one emperor or something of that nature, where those would be, you know, two horns off the same head type thing. But in containing, in looking at these things, it's a counterfeit power. It's self-centered. It behaves as if it were fully autonomous and demands total allegiance and excessive praise. Starts to sound familiar, doesn't it? And this is why there's still arguments today as to what could it be and how could it work and how does this play out. This is where I really don't have exactly what to tell you. I can go through some of these things and lay some things down, but again, the beast that's described in verse 2 seems to match the description of the beast in Daniel 7. So the characteristics of the four beasts of Daniel 7 they seem to be combined here in some ways, though, too. There's a combination. Just to go back so that we can clarify what I'm talking about with that. In Daniel 7, the description that's here, Daniel 7:7 says, "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth, was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And as it continues, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words." So as all of this is playing out, there's obviously a symbolism that's being played out within the words of Daniel and within the words of John. It's not an actual beast. It doesn't seem to be. The beast almost seems to be a government with different figureheads. But in the book of Daniel, the description of that fourth beast, you've got the horns, and then a small horn rises out. Three of them are ripped out as the one takes power, and he's yelling pompous words. Well, that could be any politician that we've ever come across in the history of the United States or anywhere else for that matter, honestly. That is one of those, the bark is bigger than the bite, except this time it sounds like the bite's just as bad. So as we look at this, in combining those beasts, in which Daniel represents four historic kingdoms that were hostile to the people of God, John seems to set forth the Antichrist as the epitome of bestial opposition to the seed of the woman. In other words, the beast that John is describing combines everything that has ever been against God's people. By combining those beasts into one, it is the Antichrist versus Christ. It is one battle for the rule of everything. It's already been won. I mean, we've already seen the battle won. Christ's blood is the reason that the battle was won, but this beast will come along and you will have no opportunity to change from worshiping it. As it comes in, it will be worshiped, and God's people will not have to. I mean, you're either going to worship the beast or you're going to worship Christ. There is no other. In other words, the main purpose here is John describing that This is a monster, a great, terrifying monster who utters blasphemies against God and persecutes the faithful. And it's important to note that the beast receives his power, dominion, and authority from the dragon, and it is handed out to him. So in these two verses, there's a lot of information. Is it still clear as muddy water?
That's good.
Because what we're seeing here, symbolically speaking, is something greater than we've ever seen before. These are where you get the conversations of the Roman Empire, the Babylonian Empire, you know, the ones that Daniel describes in chapter 7. And the thing about the descriptions in Daniel chapter 7 is this. In Daniel 7, each of those seem to represent a different kingdom. And so, you know, this is the beauty of Daniel, is that Daniel sees a vision and then Daniel interprets his vision. So you're not left with as many questions as you are with John's, because there is no interpretation for John's per se. It's what the Holy Spirit deems necessary to give at that moment, kind of thing. But Daniel goes on in chapter 7. He describes the four beasts. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head. He said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. The four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion, had eagle's wings. I watched it till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Then he describes the second one. The second was like a bear, raised up on one side, and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and thus said, arise, devour much flesh. There was another like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. And then the fourth, which is the one with the iron teeth. And you put all of those things together, Daniel then describes and says, those great beasts, which are four kings, which arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. I wish then to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces and trampled the residue with its feet. And the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them, until the Ancient of Days came, and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. So this is Daniel's description of what he had just seen. It sure sounds a whole lot like the authority, as we continue in chapter 13, that was given to this beast, was to attack the saints, to attack the church, to tear down anything that stood for Christ on this earth. I'm going to turn the recording off before I say anything about what recently I've heard that this could be. That being said, it's not that I'm scared of, I just don't know that we really need to get into that controversy too much. Do we have any questions before we go any farther? Because, I mean, I'm two verses in, and I might be able to tackle 3 and 4 pretty quick, but I'd rather just wait and see where we go from here on Wednesday night or next Sunday or whenever. Any questions?